Hello, everyone. Welcome to Degrowth in Scotland podcast. My name is Nico. I'm going to be talking to Leila and Bronner. So, yeah, they're going to be going to their first episode ever done on Degrowth in Scotland. So we are here excited. So, yeah, let me hear what they have to say.
Hi there. I'm Bronner.
Oh, and I'm Leila.
And we are members of a collective called Enough. And Enough have put this podcast together on degrowth in Scotland. We thought we would give a little bit about who Enough are, and then we'll tell you a bit about the podcast itself, and then we'll hand back over to our host in this first episode. So Enough are a collective based in Scotland, and we're working on ideas of degrowth and decolonization in Scotland. We're doing that in a couple of ways. We are working, trying to shape narratives and understandings. And we're mainly doing that through a journal called Less, which some people might know out there. We're also doing some focus on knowledge and learning and unlearning. And so we've been doing a course on degrowth in Scotland. We're doing some work around supporting people to really work with the politics of degrowth. And so there's some work happening in Glasgow around supporting people's assemblies. And we're also supporting a degrowth network, which is where the idea for this podcast came from. And so maybe Leila, yeah.
Yep. So the Scottish Degrowth Network formed last year, and it was mainly online to begin with. And after a wee bit of reflecting and some of the big things that happened, like with COP26, we took a little bit of time, and we had known Nico, who's going to be your host, through various circles, and knew that he was an emerging podcaster. So we thought, well, you know, an emerging podcaster with emerging ideas about degrowth and decolonization in Scotland. How about we put those two things together and see what we come up with? We know that there's a lot of people in Scotland who are doing work around decolonization and degrowth. But sometimes, like, that information doesn't really get out in all the different ways that it can. So we wanted to make, like, some of these ideas and some of this work known to other people, because, well, once knowledge is shared, then it becomes more acceptable and accessible, and folks are more willing to give it a shot themselves. We understand that there's a lot of, you know, barriers around, like, the language of degrowth, and indeed, like, around language of decolonization. So we wanted to try and put those ideas and that work into the ether and into your ears, hopefully. Yeah, so Rona will tell you more about how it's going to work.
Great, yeah. So in a minute, we're going to hand over to Nico, and Nico's going to kick off interviewing us as the first people for us to share a little bit about our understandings of degrowth and decolonization in Scotland. Then over the next 3 to 4 episodes, we're going to hear Nico interview people who are based all over Scotland, share their understandings of degrowth and decolonization and how they put them into practice. Because as Leila said, we know that that work is happening there and not always visible. And then in the last episode, we're going to hear from Nico on what he's learned and how he would describe it to people that he's speaking to. So like, this is the beginning of a little learning journey for Nico. Is there anything else we need to say here, or are we ready to hand over to our fantastic host?
We're hopeful that it's a learning experience for everyone, for those of us who are participating in the podcast and for everyone who's listening to it too. But yeah, I think without further ado, over to Nico.
Okay, thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me here. So I'm going to be the host for Deep Growth Podcast. And yes, I'll tell a bit about myself. My name is Nico. I do stand-up comedy as well, and I've got a podcast called Yakuluma. But today I'm here with a special guest here. So I'm so excited because I don't know nothing about degrowth. So I'm here to learn and to host all the people around Scotland that they will be learning through to each other. So yes, not to waste so much time, I've got 3 wonderful questions for you, ladies. And whoever wants to go first, just go for it. But the first question is, how would you explain or describe degrowth and in Scotland and the decolonization to people listening. Over to you, Bruno.
Oh, great. It is me first. Thanks for that, Nico. And that's okay, because I really appreciated having to think about this question, actually, because I take these terms for granted all the time, and I use them as shorthand. To me, I know what they mean. And having to like sit down and be like, how would I describe this to people, was a really good exercise. So I've got a little bit to kind of say, and so I hope that's okay. So for me, I would say the degrowth really means changing how our economy functions so that it works better for people and so that it works better for our planet. We live in a kind of country, we live in Scotland, and in a world where we're really told that in order for there to be things like jobs or good public services, that our economy must grow. And so we hear that all the time, like things need to grow, and we assume that that means because we'll have jobs and services and life will be good. But that actually isn't the case. That hasn't been kind of borne out with the world that we live in. And so there's a couple of things about the story of growth that we can really start to point out as being untrue, being myths. And so one of the things that we don't hear that much about on the news is the connection between why our economy grows and the impact it has on the environment. So our economy grows because we are producing and consuming lots of things. And the more that the economy grows, the more that we're producing and consuming. But we can already really see the challenge of that, because we hear about plastic in our oceans, we hear about the loss of species, and we hear about climate change, we hear about what fossil fuels are doing. And so it's quite clear that we can't keep going on producing and consuming lots and lots of things without having really negative impacts on our environment. There is going to be a limit to what we can do. So degrowth is really saying we need to change how we think about the economy, so we're not judging how successful it is based on how much it's growing, like how much we're producing and consuming, but more about how well people who live here are doing and how healthy the planet is doing. I've got a couple other things that I think would be good to throw in, but I wonder if Leila wanted to.
Leila.
I think Bruno's actually done quite a comprehensive grounding of what degrowth is. So I'll maybe touch a little bit more on what decolonization is or what it isn't. I think like when Bruno's talking about, you know, economics and like how our society and how we interact like with our economy is structured for us, decolonization is also about that. It's not just, you know, about a cultural shift. I think there's a lot of people who believe decolonization is making sure that we have somebody that's non-Western speaking about certain ideas, you know, or we find somebody who has a lived experience like from a colonized nation or country to speak about certain things. And that isn't really what decolonization is. It's more about a cultural and psychological and economic freedom for all, you know, but particularly for people whose land, culture, political and economic systems have already been replaced like by colonial structures. I think it's about trying to enable and recognize that, you know, self-determination is something that has been going on like throughout centuries, and that colonialism, you know, isn't something that stopped. It's something that's still an ongoing global project. You know, settlers continue to occupy land, dictate how people behave socially, politically, and again, like how our economic systems run. And that all comes from exploiting land, you know, particularly ones that have indigenous peoples living on them. So when we're talking about degrowth, we need to be thinking about decolonization as well, because all that extractivism, all that growth has been at it's been affecting like people in the world who are experiencing it the worst. So there has to come a point where we change that, you know, so that this unfairness doesn't continue.
One other thing around degrowth, which is really important, and it really links to what Leila was saying. Mm-hmm. I think degrowth really has a perception of being about the environment you know, and so like I obviously explained why that is definitely the case. But one of the other things that degrowth is about is challenging the idea that a growth economy actually works for the majority of people in this country and elsewhere. That's what we're told. We are told that the idea of growing our economy is so that we generate wealth and that high incomes will trickle down to people, and that's how we'll all do better. But I think we can look at the pandemic and see how that is just simply not true. In the pandemic, we saw the lowest paid workers in society be quite obviously the most essential. Like that's what we saw, what we needed, but we don't see them being any better paid on the back of it. We saw lots of grant systems being made available for people, which was great for those who could get them, but also lots of people fell through the cracks. So really unstable, really precarious. And we also had our hospital staff and our care workers and our teachers really move to the front line of a medical crisis and a social crisis, but with no additional support. And what we're obviously seeing now is talk of national insurance increases and tax increases, because that's how we're going to, the government's going to kind of make up for this and pay for this. But the other thing that happened during the pandemic is that the 100 top stock market companies in the world added $3 trillion to their market value since the pandemic. And the richest 25 billionaires increased their wealth by billions, by so much money that most of us can't actually get our heads around it. So this story, this idea that growth means that we'll all do better, I think we actually can say, is that the truth? What are we actually growing? And the answer is we're growing the wealth of some people at the cost of others. And that's you and me and a healthy planet. And so we can see quite clearly that a growth economy will never, ever deliver an equal or equitable society. And that has never been clearer. And so degrowth really offers us a way of thinking about how we can do differently, how we can shift out of this.
Mm. Growth is, and that's what we currently have. And what is degrowth? And for me, when I think about degrowth, there's lots of ways to think about it. But I kind of think of the idea of about priorities. It's about some processes and it's about some policies. And that's a really basic way for me to understand it. In terms of a priority, it means that we reorganize our economy away from growth as our priority, because that determines everything we do, what we choose to kind of organize around, what our economy is producing, and instead designing the economy so that our collective priority is around how everybody can live a good life. So everybody has their needs met in a dignified way. And so the economy goes from being about producing and consuming loads of things, which is obviously about resources, and more about how can we look after each other well and how can the economy be in service of that. So that for me is a change of priority. That's one thing for me that degrowth is. In terms of some processes that degrowth can be about, I like to think of the idea of divestment and then reinvestment. So we are going to divest, stop funding, take money away, stop creating the opportunities for industries like fossil fuels and also the arms trade, which are really a huge part of how our economy grows. So divesting from harmful industries, things we know aren't good for us collectively, and reinvesting that into things that we know are needed for people to live well, like better quality healthcare for everybody, like good childcare services for families, really great education for all ages, access to food, good quality food, good community services and leisure services, and really good public transport. All these things which are common goods, which everybody should be able to access well, and which we could start moving and orientating our kind of funding towards. I guess another process that for me is really important in the idea of degrowth is around democracy and democratizing things and redistribution. So democratization and redistribution. So going from things like our privatized services, which we all know we have a lot of right now, to services being publicly or community owned. It's going from wealth and land being concentrated in a really small number of hands, which is what we have in the UK and Scotland at the moment, to it being shared more equally and more fairly amongst more people and for the common good, not just for private wealth. And it's having workplaces where workers have more of a say, or even all of the say, on what they do, what they create, and how it gets done. And so some like policies, and I think it's clear what policies could be in there, but policies in there are things like a shorter work week or a 4-day work week sometimes, bringing our utilities back into public or community control. It's democratic workplaces with more employee ownership and worker co-ops. And it's like re-changing our pay structure so we don't have this massive gap between our highest paid and those who are in the lowest income. So that's much fairer. So that for me is what degrowth could look like in Scotland and in the UK. But I think there's a really important part around degrowth being about context. So kind of building internationally, building on what Leila was kind of talking about in terms of decolonization, it's recognizing that we, when we talk about degrowth, it's not just what we need to degrow, it's who. And the answer to that is countries with the biggest consumption. It's Europe, it's North America, it's Australia, as a kind of broad brushstroke. These are the countries that need to degrow. And so degrowth isn't a universal demand. It doesn't mean the same thing in all the places. I think what degrowth encourages us to say is that by breaking away from growth globally, lower income countries can be given the opportunity to pursue ways of meeting the needs of their citizens away from a drive of growth in a way that makes sense for them, building on their context and what they have. So it's just that kind of giving people, countries, the opportunity to develop in ways which work for them. For me, I think there's a really important part of degrowth, which is about the idea of reparations, which is the repayment to lower income countries from richer countries of a lot of what has made rich countries rich. It's cancelling debts, which keeps countries poor, and it's the restructuring of trade and finance relationships, so it's going to be fairer going forward. So like that's the big brushstrokes for me of what degrowth is. And then I think to get really practical, degrowth is going to be what you're going to see and interview over the next few weeks in terms of what's happening in Scotland. You know, you're going to hear from tool libraries and about how to do arts and culture differently and local food initiatives and like, and on the ground level, that's what degrowth is for me. And so like, I get really excited because in so many ways, we already have the seeds of a degrowth future here in Scotland. Like, it's there, so much of what you're going to see, it's there. What we need is the politics and the institutions to really change so that these projects become the norm. They're what we see everywhere, not just a kind of fringe or an exception. And so that really for me is around us knowing that we can really have a better future in this country, but it's going to take us to get organized, to get political, and to really fight and work together for it. So that's degrowth for me, Nico. Thanks.
Well, explanation there about degrowth. Yes, I've got a second question for you. How do you put these ideas into practice in your work or in community?
I'll come in this one. I think just to go back like to what, to the first question, but also just like how we think about words. And if words are used in certain ways, you know, and we misunderstand them, if we misunderstand words, we misunderstand like each other. And like these terms, you know, like you're starting to see ideas around, or the word degrowth and the word decolonization, you know, appearing here and there. You know, and they're quite casually like thrown around, especially like in certain like social justice spaces, and people believe that just by saying the words, you know, that's enough. You know, but there's something about we need, you know, it, I guess what we were saying before, it, some of the efforts of like, you know, trying to read more Black, Brown and Indigenous writers, for example, or under, you know, open up your worldview is good. But that's just a step, you know, it's like, it's not radical, it's not transformative. You know, we need to be active, you know, we need to act. So it's not just about, you know, decentering like certain narratives. Like Brona was saying, it's like these systems, you know, and particularly ones which are like settler imposed systems, continue to oppress, you know, Black, Brown, Indigenous people. you know, there's gendered and racialized like hierarchies, and that continues on. So it's about acting, you know, not just thinking, and it's about being, this is another word that also gets thrown about quite a lot, but being in community, like with folks, to be able to do that. Like you can think on your own, but then you need to take action, you know, with other people in order to make that change. And obviously, well, not obviously, it's quite a scary thing, I think, for people to do, you know, it's like, and especially now, it's going to be more difficult for people to get into a room with other people without feeling, I might catch COVID, you know, or, you know, anything, or they might just feel anxious. But one of the main things that we need to do and have to do is act. And that means coming together and doing things together, which make change. It makes people feel good. Like, for example, during the COP26, whatever it is you want to call it, I was down the picket, some of the picket lines with the cleansing strikers, which is for another podcast, I think. But, you know, it's nerve-wracking being there. It's nerve-wracking putting yourself out on the line. And I wasn't one of those workers, but I felt nervous for them. And I knew that they must have also felt nervous, you know, just having some small conversations with them. But see, like when people are going by and they're beeping their horn and they're saying yes, you know, and people feel part of something, it's then capturing that and acting on it. So yeah, that's me waffling with words, but it's about.
Yeah, I actually, like, thank you for that, Leila. I really love the example of the picket workers, because I think degrowth really has I'm going to use the word image problem, how it's often perceived as very removed from people's lives on the ground. And I think, like, there was just such a huge connection, and it was so visible, the connection between our climate and what's happening with our climate and the reality and the conditions of our of workers and folks who are in the front lines. And so that really became very, very obvious. And like also, like, I was thinking about this question and I was like, yeah, well, enough does its work and it's great. But also I think about degrowth and decolonization as an everyday practice. And I think it's exactly what you're saying. It's that my life has meaning and is successful, not because I'm part of an economy, but because I'm part of a community. And that's what I'm choosing to practice. Like, that's what practicing degrowth and decolonization is for me.
Well, yep, I'm just going to move straight to the last question. Yeah, there is a phrase, if it's not just, it's not degrowth. What does this mean to you?
First in Zoom. thanks, Nico. I really love this question. I love this phrase. It came from, I think from a group in Montreal, was like where the first time I had kind of seen it at an event. I saw a picture. And for me, it means everything to me, the idea that if it's not just, it's not degrowth, because at the end of the day, when you strip it all back, our current economic system is about power. That's what's going on. Who really benefits and who has benefited from an economic system that is just about producing more stuff? And I think Leila put it into context internationally. And of course, we know we can put it that into context in Scotland. And so when you ask the question, who benefits, it's so obvious that it's not a fair system. It's unfair to, like, generation after generation of people in Scotland who have to work harder and harder to possibly not even be able to put their heating on at the moment or put food on their table. And it's definitely not fair to folks who are living in other countries who work for terrible wages in terrible conditions to produce things for us and then have to live with the pollution. So I think for me, more than any other argument that I could make about degrowth, I would emphasize this, that we are in really quite a pivotal moment in the world in terms of what we know about climate breakdown. And there is no future worth fighting for that isn't fair for people everywhere. We cannot respond to this moment, which we know means that so much needs to be changed, by continuing to stand on the backs of people who already bear the brunt in order to save ourselves or just to save the richest. That is an utterly hollow future. And we can and we must build a better world that is fair and just for everyone. And I think that degrowth is one of the ways that we can think about doing that.
Beautifully, beautifully said, Bruna. And yeah, I don't have much to add to that. I think just to echo like what Brona said, it's like we can't keep ignoring the worsening conditions that are happening for everybody. And it just feels like, you know, it's eking ever closer to all of us. You know, the impacts of capitalism is already in every single aspect of our lives, you know, from the way that we interact, like with people that we know, from how we buy things, you know, from the way that we think about things, how we watch things. Now we have like a real good opportunity to actually like push that back. And while something else is in the middle, you know, or something else is coming, and we're not sure what yet, we have an opportunity to make that just better. And I feel like those words feel hollow, but I just feel that we have like a real opportunity to actually like make meaningful connections like with each other, and not to be all doomsayer about it. But that's where the richest part of life is, right? The more that we get to know other people, and the more that we connect with them, and the more that we share experiences, we can't continue to allow both the lands, minds, bodies of each and every one of ours to be occupied, exploited, and destructed by a couple of hundred strangers who we don't know anything about.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for me to be the host of this one. So I'm going to end up by saying this podcast is the first of series of episodes exploring degrowth and decolonization in Scotland. I wanted to tune in over the few weeks to enjoy the discussions. And on the 31st of March, we will be hosting a gathering in Glasgow. This gathering is open to anyone challenging our economic system in big or small ways. Drop us an email. info@enough.scot to find out more. Thank you.